We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, "Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart."
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding an old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Bulldog, the Puppy 2 launched today on Underdog.
What's that
the
now?
Puppy 2.
Oh, wow.
Am I going to see you in there?
You won't know it. I'll be in there under a
pseudonym.
A different identity.
Fluminase.
Yeah, Fluminati.
I'll know that's you. I'll know that's you, the Puppy 2. I just joined 10 slows.
Oh,
so,
man.
I mean, it'd be great if you were in one of these 10. We go head to head. But I doubt it.
Yeah.
I don't think that's your idea of fun.
You ever have that thing where you just remember an hour later that something you said in the first moment of the show was a good album name, but you can't remember what the thing was? There was something I said right away, like an hour ago, that in my head I went, "Oh, that'd be a good album name," and I didn't say it. And now that I didn't say it, I'm never going to remember.
Well, there's your rewind opportunity.
All the more reason not to make an album.
Odyssey Rewind. With us now on the Wester Hotline is John Harris, sideline reporter for the Texans. And John, so I think we've spoken before. Sal loves you. Sal Capaccio mentions your name all the time. And I just discovered from your Twitter something I'm very excited about, that you have written a book on clock management. I think I need this book. I mean, can you tell us a couple of, before we get into the Texans, maybe a couple of like conclusions or maybe discoveries of yours?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's called Time's on Our Side. I actually wrote it in 2020. Well, I wrote it over a few years, and I was the genesis of the book was I used to be a coach. My dad was a coach. I grew up as a coach. And in my final year, we're playing our biggest rivals, never beaten them in 35 years of school history. And I essentially screwed up kind of the way that I managed the last probably 4 minutes of the game. And I always just regretted that. And it always bothered me. And it's always bothered me when I watch coaches do things, you know, from a clock management perspective, that just, it's so simple. Just why can't we make good decisions with the clock? And ironically, one of the chapters is about the Bills-Chiefs game, the divisional playoff game, which I believe was the 21 season.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, obviously how the Bills did not manage those 13 seconds as well as they could have. And on the flip side, how the Chiefs managed those 13 seconds about as well as you possibly could. Now, about a year later, after I published the book, then they changed the kickoff rules. And everything sort of changed from that standpoint. But it was like, I got a whole chapter on that particular game, but there have been so many moments in both college and pro football where, you know, coaches very easily could have walked out of a building with a win, and yet they did things that maybe didn't seem so obvious at the time that just seemed to stand out to me even more so. And I was on the sidelines. I've been on the sidelines since 2014, and I've seen, you know, well, not D'Amico Ryan's, but Bill O'Brien was the worst. He would compound one mistake with another and do it multiple times in a game. It would just be a killer, and it would cost him a timeout on a final drive. And he would make one mistake one game and then turn around and make a different mistake the next game. And it's so maddening to watch, you know, coaches that get paid millions and millions of dollars make these mistakes that guys that play Madden know exactly what to do every time they pick up a controller. So I kind of wrote it from that perspective. And it's I got a few sitting on my shelf, so if you guys send me some addresses, I'll send them. It's a quick read. It just is kind of stories from games that, you know, where coaches could have made some different decisions and how they could have changed things going down the way, going down the road, and in all different facets. You know, going for two when they didn't need to, taking a knee, going for two instead of having one blocked and returned. You know, all those different things have happened in a game at some point. I try to kind of highlight them and kind of talk through what coaches should have been doing at that point.
When you say, like, it seems like it's so easy, anybody playing Madden knows how to do it, what do you think, did you learn anything about what it is that trips guys up in that situation? And even, you know, I know it was, you know, high school football or whatever it was for yourself, those 4 minutes that you were the sort of the genesis for this, what, were you distracted with too many things, too much on your plate, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's just that, you know, when you think about a coach, you know, just a head coach around the NFL, when a guy gets into coaching, the last thing that really a coach ever learns is how to manage the game. And it should be one of the first things that they learn. You get into it and you're like, you know, I want to coach linebackers. Okay, well, you're going to coach linebackers. And you start, you know, in the defensive meeting room and you're a quality assistant and you're learning everything about the schemes and everything you're running. You're learning about offenses, what offenses are trying to do to you. The last thing you end up learning is how to manage a game. And you really should be learning that from the beginning. And I use the Madden thought, and I don't know if I put this in the book, but I happened to call. We had this at Energy Stadium one day, and they're like, hey, would you just do this in the afternoon for us and call play-by-play this Madden championship for the city of Houston? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I noticed that the guys that end up playing Madden, and there's a part of me that there's kind of a joke here, but kind of not. But I realized that the guys that played Madden, they don't know jack squat about the X's and O's. Like, I asked them, they don't know anything. They don't know an X from a Y from a Z from the H. They barely even know the quarterback. But I'll be damned if they don't know when to call timeout, when to run a play and get out of bounds. When they know everything about how to manage the clock and manage the game because that's what they do. And I got to a point where I saw that, you know, head coaches really have to spend a ton of time managing the game and going through those scenarios and knowing them inside and out exactly how they want to call a game or how they want to manage the last part of a game because it's not what they've grown up doing. You know, I think about Bill O'Brien. I went to college with Bill. I know his exact tenure all the way through. I knew exactly what he was doing. And at no point did he ever really kind of learn or should have learned, I guess, at some point, you know, how do you manage these things? Even when you can learn it from Belichick, but until you're kind of in that hot seat, until you have to do it, man, you have to be really, really good at it to make sure you're not making those mistakes. And the good coaches have somebody in your ear. Coach, you got two timeouts. You got this. Hey, take a timeout here. Hey, this ball needs to be thrown outside the numbers. Hey, we can't run the football here. All those sort of things have to be communicated. And I think a lot of times coaches aren't and haven't done that from the time they started in coaching. They really get into it once they become a head coach, and it's at that point, sometimes it's too late. It's something I think all coaches should be doing more of as they're kind of climbing the ranks so that when they do become a head coach, they can handle those timing situations a lot better.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, this is really right up my alley, and I'd love to ask you 50 more questions about it. Even yesterday, we were having a conversation about how you know, fourth down, it's become more normal. You sort of expect a team on fourth and one or fourth and two to go for it now, whereas a decade ago it was more, you know, uncommon. And how, like, Bulldog had the observation, John, that, you know, last year we saw an uptick in rushing. And, man, think about if you knew you were going to use four downs, how much more sense it makes to run on first or second to get yourself to – Josh Allen teams, should they ever not convert a four down sequence? Like, third and four, got it. He's going to run twice. We're good. Like, it's just, it's so easy. The rushing quarterbacks and the two high safeties and everything. I don't know. Does that fit in sort of your with your sensibilities?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. It's not, when I was coaching, you know, I was young. I was 25, 26, and you know, I had, you know, kids that were 17, 18 years old. I mean, they weren't that much younger than I was. And their parents always kind of looked at me like, hey, he's a young guy. Like, and they would always kind of question some of my decisions in some sense because I was so young. I was so inexperienced. And I used to tell them, I was at a Christian school, and I said, I got four downs. God gave me four downs. I'm going to use them. And yeah. If I had Josh Allen, I'd think the exact same way. I've got four downs. I'm going to use them. And I love the way that Joe Brady is sort of taking that offense and giving it kind of that sensibility, you know, using six offensive linemen a lot. You know, the way that James Cook ran the ball, the way those guys work together, but you've got the ultimate weapon in Josh that you get to third and four and you're like, man, this should be money. This should be absolute money 60 to 65% of the time that you can even if third down gets kind of shut down, you don't get much when you're running the ball. Okay, you're fourth and three. I still be pretty confident that Josh, on some sort of run pass option mm-hmm. where he's got options to do either, makes it so difficult for a defense. And I just think that's such a weapon to have. That's why I Josh didn't have a great game against us, but I know every time that he's on the other side, he scares the hell out of me because of that. Because he's got that opportunity to do that. I mean, we have yet to stop Lamar Jackson in the number of times that we have faced him. And so that's another one, especially with Derrick Henry. Man, that's going to change the way that I'm calling a game, even at the end of the game, too. If I'm going to try and keep the ball away from an opponent, it can completely change what I want to do with my offense because I can burn time. Hey, one extra first down, what is that worth? And that's, I think, where, you know, when good coaches at that point are thinking that way, then the biggest key is then communicating it to your offensive coordinator and making sure your offensive coordinator isn't pulling a Kyle Shanahan like he did in the Super Bowl, where Dan Quinn doesn't talk to him and say, hey, look, run the ball. If you run the ball, the Patriots can't come back on us. And instead, what do? He threw it. Ryan gets sacked. They got a punt. And then Tom Brady is the GOAT. And, you know, we know what happens at that point. But that's where good coaches that understand that say, hey, here's the clock. Here's what we're trying to do. Let's make sure we can do it. Well, now you're not going to run Matt Ryan, but you might with Josh Allen. Absolutely. And I think that changes what offensive coordinators then call and how they go about it. But yeah, I think it's absolutely that, how coaches treat those situations at the end. And, you know, I didn't write about the Kyle Shanahan one in my book, but that's one that kind of fits in the same kind of situation. Kyle's is like, no, we're going to do what we do. Okay, that's great. And it costs you the Super Bowl. But right. If you're smart about the clock and how you manage it, you might step away from what you do a little bit and still win a championship like you were supposed to.
Right. John Harris is our guest, author and sideline reporter for the Texans. The book, again, is called Times on Our Side. It's a couple of years old, but you can go to John's Twitter, jharrisfootball, and right up top is a link to it. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Let's get to the Texans. Two-time defending AFC South winners. One thing that maybe is the most interesting thing about them is that they had a really tough time on the offensive line last year, and they went and kind of just flushed it. And maybe conventional thinking would be like, that's not going to be, you know, an upgrade exactly, trading Tunsil for one. But I don't know. It wasn't like they were good. So what?
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it?
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
What do you think of their strategy here this offseason?
It's funny because I would hear people say this a lot after the trade of Laramie Tunsil, and I'll be upfront and honest about it. I love Laramie. Like I said, I used to coach in Jacksonville, Florida, and he grew up in Lake City, which is about 45 minutes away. So I always had my eye on Laramie for a long time. I think he's kind of a cool, you know, almost too cool for school kind of guy, but he really cares about his teammates and such. But Laramie is not, how do I say this the right way? Laramie is going to be Laramie. As he's known here in Houston, as C.J. Stroud called him, a vet. Like, Laramie is going to do exactly what he needs to do. Hey, if I'm a 9-to-5 guy, he's going to show up at 8:59 and 54 seconds, and he's going to leave at 5 o'clock and 1 second. Like, there's not going to be a ton of extra that goes with him. And so when I was fairly certain that if they could find a good deal, they would move him. And it was actually Sal who texted me and said, they traded Tunsil. I was like, I knew it. I knew it was going to happen because what they're looking for up front was not the most talented offensive line. And last year's line, even though it was not good, it was talented. They had a lot of talented guys up front, but they weren't a good offensive line. What they traded for in talent, they're hoping to get back in cohesion and a better working line together. And they felt like Laremy was not the piece that was going to be able to do it. Laremy loved his PFF grades. He loved to be out on his own, on his island, like, hey, man, I've got this all by myself. Just leave me out here. And his grades, his PFF grades would be great. But as a whole, it wasn't working together because Laremy was too much of an independent contractor. The few other guys kind of going into business for themselves. What they want from this offensive line is they'd like to have as much talent, but you're not going to when you let Laremy Tunsil walk out the door. Well, what you're looking for is a better together front five, not four guys that don't play very well and one guy that plays really well. They want all five guys working together, the proverbial five fingers as a fist sort of thing. That's what they want. They want a line that can come off the football and hit you in the face. And one other thing about this offensive line, as I think about it, they wanted to get bigger. They went and they got bigger. They drafted Ursary in the second round. He's 330 pounds. They went in and brought in Trent Brown, who's maybe the biggest human being I've ever seen in my life. They brought in Cam Robinson, who is not small by any stretch of the imagination. They brought in some size. They want to try and move people off the football. They want to impose their will up front. And they felt like Laremy was not that kind of guy to be able to do that. And he didn't foster the cohesiveness in the room. So they got rid of the offensive line coach, got rid of the offensive coordinator. They felt like those were issues last year as well. They brought in guys they felt would be better together. And now they're probably going to have with Nick Haley as offensive coordinator and Cole Popovich as offensive line coach. They feel like they've got a better overall group that has to play well together. But if that group doesn't play well together, then it is going to be a world of hurt down here because you just, you got rid of your line you had last year and it wasn't very good. And if it's not good again this year, okay, well, where are the fingers pointed at that point? So there's a lot of pressure on that group to get it done this year with what they've got. And I think one of the ways they want to try and get it done differently is by being better, running the football more effectively, running the football, which is something in big games they couldn't do last year.
John, a year ago at this time, we would have, a lot of people in football, not just Texans fans, we would have been crushing on the receiving core, the Houston Texans. Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Steph Diggs as a free as a trade, and like looks like a really nice receiving core. And a year later, Diggs tears his ACL and is in New England. Now Dell has the devastating injury in the was that in the playoffs, and Nico Collins is still there. Second and third round picks on receivers. How do you feel about the sort of remade receiving core?
You know, when you say all that, and you're like, oh, my God, we lost Diggs and Tank. You're like, oh, my God, what are they going to do? But I really think they drafted well. I was a big fan. You know, I do a lot of draft work. I was a big fan of both Cyclones, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll. I didn't think they'd have an opportunity to get both. And I felt like they weren't going to bring Diggs back. And I kept thinking about players that, one at the bottom of the barrel, but also not the T. Higgins, and obviously T. didn't leave Cincinnati, but, that ilk where you'd pay $35 million a year for a receiver. They weren't going to go out and spend $30 million on DK Metcalf. They weren't going to do that. They just paid Nico Collins. So I thought, who's kind of in that middle ground from a contract? And I looked at Jackson, and I went, hey, Christian Kirk's due to be a free agent soon. What about Christian Kirk? And I thought he'd be a good fit for Nico. And, during OTAs and minicamp, he really was. He's a good fit. He offers an open outlet, kind of like what Steph did. I think people forget this. A lot of people think the Texans were a little bit of a disappointment last year. They had all those receivers, as you mentioned, and it was like, they were supposed to be really, really good. Well, we were 10-7 against the first-place schedule. We just weren't quite ready to beat the heavies at that time, especially because we lost Tank near the end of the season. And we lost Steph against the Colts in Week 8, I believe it was. And what Steph had become for CJ was, I'm not sure what is going on back here because I'm getting pressure from all over, but Steph, you're open, I'm throwing it to you. And I think that's what Christian is going to be for CJ as well. But the two Cyclone rookies coming to Houston, Higgins and Knoll. Higgins was fantastic in OTAs and minicamp. I was really excited. And he's got a body like Nico. He's not as big and strong as Nico, but he is everything they want in a receiver. Speed on the outside. I had football ops guys come in there and practice. Like, there was one night or one day he roasted a DB, and they're like, that DB is our fastest guy on the team, right? And Higgins beat him by 2 yards just on a 9 route. Just go. So we got that ability, I think, to be better at receiver. And we actually just talked about it today on my radio show about what if Tank can come back. It's a long shot. I mean, it's a real long shot. But if he were able to come back in December, it gives the whole city. This city loves Tank Dell. I can't even explain it. I mean, I know he played at University of Houston, but we've got a lot of University of Houston alums, but it's not just that. It's like every time Tank does something in our building, our fans go crazy. And to have the juice that he would give if he could come back. Now, that's a mouthful after what he went through and what he's gone through. It took him 2 months just to get the ACL surgery because they had to repair everything else. So I'm not banking on that. But if Higgins and Knoll can live up to the expectation and you put those two with Nico and Kirk has a good year, now you've got four guys that you can really kind of spread the wealth around and hopefully you get something from your tight ends this year. And maybe your passing game is what you want it to be in 25, what you wanted it to be in 24. So it doesn't have the, quote, big three names, but I think the sneaky signing of Kirk was huge, and the drafting of those two wide receivers, they were massive for C.J. Stroud.
The Texans swap out Josh Allen's former BFF Diggs for his actual BFF, Christian Kirk, this year. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, you got to love a guy named Tank when he runs 160 pounds. Who isn't drawn to that?
Well, I'm telling you, if you meet Tank outside the building or see him outside the building, I'm telling you, fans don't know. They see him and they're like, oh, my God, you're Tank. Like, I mean, he's that small. I mean, he looks like he should be in the eighth grade, but I see defensive backs. When Tank is fully healthy, I see defensive backs scared like no other to face that guy. And the shame about his injury that happened against the Chiefs the week, about 5 days before we put the Ravens on Christmas, was he was dominating the Chiefs. Chiefs had no way of stopping him in that game. He was killing everybody, McDuffie included, and then he makes the touchdown catch. And our guy just happens to be there in a freak accident, and it kind of changed the rest of the season. It really took a lot of the juice out of the rest of the season, and obviously that late in the season is probably going to take a lot of juice out of this one. It'd be great to have him back. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Plus, he got hurt the year before on a goal line block, which,
right,
didn't need that. Very good, John. Well, again, Jay Harris Football, if people are interested in your book, I'd recommend it. I'm eager to read it. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate it. Y'all have a great year.
All right. Thanks. John Harris, who covers the Texans, the Bills, visit Houston week 12. Thursday night.
Amazon
Prime. Which has the Yankees tonight, you told me.
Yeah.
Got to know this stuff.
You do.
Every game somewhere else. Mm-hmm. What are we watching here, Tudden?
We are watching Tudden, yes. I don't believe this is on our cable here. I couldn't find it anywhere. But so it's fine. It works. We don't really need the commentary.
No, that doesn't help us.
No.
Right now. Yes. Okay. 803-0550. We talked about the Bills earlier. Can McDermott or Bean afford a down year? What's a down year? We might want to get back to that. We'll see. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here back after the update. This is WGR.
I would have to say Josh Allen, just because I think we've seen him perform better in playoff games against the Chiefs than we've seen Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. You go back to that AFC Championship game a couple of seasons ago that was in Baltimore. The Ravens came in rolling. It was their year. They were all set to do it. And they played basically their worst game of the year that day against the Chiefs. Last year in Buffalo, Lamar Jackson goes in there with a team that really hadn't been turning the ball over, and they commit several key turnovers in a loss to Buffalo in the divisional round. Whereas while Josh Allen hasn't gotten over the hump, we've seen him play some masterful games against the Chiefs and in playoff games.
Dan Graziano, who will beat Mahomes in the playoffs first? Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Graziano going with Allen. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. What am I looking at? I am looking at something called an Uncrusta Burger. Would this interest you? From the Lucy Burge account. She likes to comment on food, which that's how I usually find out about these kind of things that are at ball games, ballparks, and in this case, the Minnesota State Fair.
All right. You've got my attention.
Uncrusta Burger. Want to guess what this is going to be? Yeah, you kind of have to know the reference. I mean, maybe you do.
Aren't Uncrustables like a prepackaged kid snack, peanut butter and jelly,
exactly,
but
right,
without crust, right? Uncrustables?
Exactly right.
Okay.
A 4-ounce hamburger patty with cheese, pickles, and special sauce, sandwiched between two deep-fried peanut butter and grape jelly Uncrustables.
I'm good. No. That doesn't have to be terrible. I've never...
Right.
I've never... It
doesn't have to be
first. I don't know, 10 years ago? Longer, maybe. I saw peanut butter, you know, offered at a gourmet burger place. I've never taken the plunge, so I can't speak to it, but it is something that's been around a long time, so it's not completely foreign. I don't know about jelly necessarily on a burger, like sweet grape jam or something like that. That doesn't sound like a good thing to me. But the peanut butter, and I like peanut butter a lot, I've never been able to get to, like, I'm going to try that burger with the peanut butter on it. I just can't do it. I don't know. Mostly because I don't like when peanut butter, I don't even like putting peanut butter on toast when toast is too warm out of the toaster. I need it to cool off. So I do not like when peanut butter gets liquefied at all. I want it to be a firm foundational structure to the sandwich. Like, it starts oozing out the side of the sandwich. You lost me. I need a bib now. So anyway, peanut butter on a burger, that's going to be hot. Melted cheese, I don't know.
It doesn't appeal to me at all.
Does not get me there.
No.
I bet there are people who swear by it because, like I said, it's on these menus and has been for 20 years, so it's not like some fly-by-night idea. But
no, it isn't. You're right. It's been around.
Just not ever got me curious enough to go, yeah, I'll do that. I think the first place I saw it was like peanut butter and like jalapenos or something. And like, again, no.
Okay.
That's not jiving for me, but, you know, I respect you. It must work for a lot of people. So, yeah, I'm not going to the Minnesota State Fair?
The Minnesota State Fair.
What's going on already, or are they just previewing it?
I don't know.
It seems early for a state fair, but what the hell do I know about Minnesota?
I not a lot.
Like, state fair season seems like August to me, but.
Really?
Anyway. Yeah. Maybe they have that all different times of the year. Maybe it's too hot in August in Minnesota.
I have no idea. I know nothing about the subject.
No.
When are there state fairs? I guess summer, I would say. Yeah, summer. Syracuse.
Right.
Is where we have our state fair.
Yeah.
Drive by it a lot.
I've never been to the state fair.
Never. Neither have I. No. Not ruling it out. Someday. Well, what? I pretty much am. I can't imagine why I'd ever be there.
Yeah.
I just...
There would have to be some concert happening that is just like, I can't skip this. It's going to be the last time I might be able to see blank, or the old, you know, maybe I've never seen blank, whatever. Something like that is what it would take to get me, I think, to the state fair at this point.
Mm-hmm. 803-0550 if you want to tell us about your state fair experiences. No, we really aren't. Personally, yes, but for the purposes of all this, not that interested. Not interested really in that. I am interested, though, and maybe so are you, in a tweet by Jared Smola today from Draft Sharks, pointing out how Josh Allen's rushing production has been in decline over the last few years. Does it feel like it? The only thing I think about with this is now 2 seasons ago, where they pretty much told you they were going to cut back on that.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing where Brandon Bean talked about, you know, do we need you to take off in week 2 or whatever the exact quote was. And you had Allen sliding in week 3, I think it was, against Washington, and talking after the game about how he won a bet because he did it. Like, there was a mandate to bring that down. And then they were 6-6 and they're just like, you know,
and he just
screw it.
Went crazy, right?
That didn't, you know, really help us. Now we have to go. Jared tweeted about how, in terms of carries per game and designed carries per game.
See, that's a big key.
They have gone down mostly 4 years in a row. Carries per game, Allen spiked from 7.2 to 7.8 in 2022, and then 6.5, 6.0 since. Not a huge drop. Design carries per game, 21 to 24, 4.2, 4.2, 3.6, 3.5.
Right. That's not surprising. Design, I'm glad that it's specified there. I'm never even like sure where to go look for that. But like his rushing is not all the, it's not all created equal, right? Their dependency on it, how often they want to, you know, break the glass in case of emergency, it's you know, just looking at the football card stats, if you will, it can be hard to determine that because he's taken off on plays that they might have wanted him to throw the football, but it didn't work out. And, you know, he gains 20 yards and everybody's like, oh, what a play. Great. Thank God he can run. So it stands to reason that just over time they would, you know, they're backing up what they're saying. They don't call on it as often design-wise. But once you're playing, it's hard to stop him from doing it. You're not going to tell him what to do when he feels pressure. Like, he's the one out there on the field. He feels pressure. You hope he's right about it and doesn't bail out too soon, but he's going to get out of there. Get out of there. But, yeah, it you know, it's funny, though, that how the touchdowns have really spiked. I mean, we started out do we have the touchdown bet his first year here?
I think second.
Okay, because you know, 9, 9, 8, 6, 7, and then 15 and 12 the last 2 years. That's really where their version of the sneak, the tush-push type thing, I think it's really been the last 2 years that they started really utilizing that as sort of like a specialty that they do. And I'm really curious to see what they do with it after getting sort of it being unsuccessful against Kansas City a couple of times. But the touchdowns have really spiked, but the yards are down quite a bit.
Right. When he, I've said this many times, but when he showed up, I had no concept of what he could be as a runner. You know, for the most part over the years, quarterbacks running, it's bad when that happens. Like, you don't want your offense to feature that at all. Feature is even going too far. Like, you don't want an offense where the quarterback is scrambling all the time. You know, it just means what? The protection is breaking down. Nobody's open. It's like a desperation.
He doesn't see it well enough to know what to do.
Right, yeah,
It can be a bad sign.
It used to be all about that. Like, hang in there. And then Allen comes along, and he's jumping over Anthony Barr in, like, his first win. And suddenly you have this, I mean, a specimen. And he's running over guys. Everything we've all seen. And I never thought about that at all. I always loved Jackson in college, and Jackson was the best runner at the quarterback position ever. Like, there was no even debate about that. And you could see that in the highlights. I mean, there hardly were even Josh Allen highlights.
Right.
And so he has this element, and that touchdown bet with you and also with another friend, he had 8 rushing touchdowns as a rookie in 12 games. I'm like, that's never happening again.
Right, I think the bet was like 6.5, I think, if I remember right. Yeah, the next year was like he's not going to – because he had 8, and so you set the line at 6.5, and yeah.
He had 9 the next year.
Right.
9. You said the numbers maybe. 9, 8, 9, 6, 7, 15, 12.
Yeah.
It just always blows my mind to think about like where he's at career-wise in rushing touchdowns. 65 in the regular
– We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Season only. You know, people talk about this. Didn't it come up once or twice here this week? The Cam Newton comparison. It was Jeremy Kahn from Baltimore who said it. A lot of people say it. Jackson, in comparison, I mean, Jackson avoids the big hits.
Right.
Allen almost looks like he's looking for them sometimes, like one of those running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And Cam Newton, who's big like Allen, of course, kind of flamed out. Pretty young.
Yeah, he broke down physically.
And, you know, Allen saying all that, for whatever it's worth, I mean, he's got the streak going of consecutive starts. He hasn't been somebody that know, he's played through a couple of things, but he hasn't been somebody that's missed time. I just wonder if there's any reason to try to predict that with him. You know, is that something Jared's tweet about rushes? It's not, again, a steep decline, but it's there. Is that something that's on the Bills' mind? Not just risk of injury on a given play,
mm-hmm.
but
long range.
You only have so many hits in you.
Yeah, it should be. I'd be surprised if it's not. I'll put it that way.
I mean,
these people worked with Cam Newton.
That's right.
So they would know. And that's why I think it's good anytime you can differentiate designed runs versus scrambles, because the designed run is obviously that's the coaching staff, that's Joe Brady saying, we need this play and we're going to count on you to do it. And the scrambles are really out of their control. I mean, they can tell them to curtail it and be careful and whatever, but you got to be very, I think you got to be very cautious about doing that. You don't want to mess up, get bad swing thoughts in his head. You know, oh, coach said not, whatever. Just let him, he's got to play. But yeah, I think from very early on, like once he established himself as one of the very best, boy, I would hope that they're thinking about, you know, 15 years, you know, in the big scheme of things here and not just, you know, leave it all out there. Yeah, the way they've talked anyway would indicate that they're at least aware of it. Whether they're actually doing anything about it, I mean, I can't tell you, but I'd be surprised if they're not.
803-0550 to comment. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog. We'll be right back. This is WGR. This is one I'm not sure I should bring up because I think I should know the answer here, and I don't. I'm a little bit jealous of these teams like Washington today and New Orleans that are unveiling throwback looks. I love a throwback look. And I don't know where it stands with the Bills on what they're doing or if they're doing anything.
Yeah.
There was a report, but I haven't been able to find it, about going to the 90s uniform next year in the new stadium.
Okay.
This goes back a couple of months, I think. But I don't know anything else about what they're planning to do.
I thought when the schedule first came out, there was something about select games being opportunities for teams to show off the different gear, and that all Bills game was one such game. But I can remember Jeremy tweeting about it, but I do not have it. It's just not something I retained. But I think there is something. I don't know if it's a throwback, a third uniform, or what it is. I don't think it's been leaked, but I think there was something on the schedule or shortly after the schedule release that indicated the Bills would be a part of some uniform initiative within the league.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something like that coming, if my memory's not completely faulty on this. But as far as what the 90s look in the new stadium, I don't recall hearing anything about that myself.
Okay. Do you want it?
Yeah. Sure.
Red helmets?
Yeah. Go nuts. Yeah.
Permanent?
I don't know about permanent, but mix it in.
Mix it in.
Yeah. Mix it in.
I don't think I would mind. It's not something I crave. I like when, you know, like that team was so special in Bills history, and, you know, the red helmets went into the 2000s, into the drought, but it's kind of like theirs, you know? Never before Kelly, well, I mean, maybe a couple of years.
Yeah.
But still, like, that's his team with the red helmets. Mm-hmm. And Allen has already established himself as a star, you know, with the white helmets.
Right.
And I guess I kind of would 60-40... say, let's just play that out. Once in a while, like you're saying?
Yeah.
Once a year?
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah.
Every team pretty much does that.
Yeah. I don't want it to be too much, though. And I'd want to be careful about doing things that are, like, I'm just going to sound like the oldest person in the world, too new. Like, you want to turn the clock back Okay. But I mentioned this thing about how I think a month or two ago, Yankees-Dodgers were on Fox on a Saturday and then ESPN on Sunday. And the Saturday game, the Dodgers were wearing like City Connect uniforms or something. And it really bummed me out because when I saw the game on the guide, I went, Dodgers-Yankees, I just want to look at that.
Yeah.
I just want to turn that on my TV and just look at it. It's classic. And the Dodgers were wearing something like, no, you shouldn't be allowed to do that against the Yankees. You want to do that against the Astros or somebody? Fine.
Astros.
Who knows what the hell they're going to be wearing anyways. But Yankees, Dodgers, give me the World Series from the set. I don't need this. So I'd want to be careful about that with the Bills, too. Like, don't overdo it. You know, and I don't know what this thing that I'm thinking of exactly is. I'll try to find that, like you were trying to find the thing about the new stadium. But I think there is something happening this year.
All right. Well, we'll effort to get that for you. Do you want the red helmets? 803-0550. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, back after the update. This is WGR.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes?
Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.